On the show today, we get the latest on the collapsed dam in Ukraine.
The area was inundated after a massive dam holding back a reservoir was destroyed, sending a deluge downstream into a war zone and forcing villagers to flee.
Plus, Prince Harry goes to court.
He said the press would try to destroy his relationships with girlfriends, blaming them for causing his circle of friends to shrink, but leading to bouts of depression and paranoia. In another section of the statement, he said, quote, "How much more blood will stain their typing fingers before someone can put a stop to this madness?"
And later in the program, we find out why some Tigray refugees are afraid to return to Ethiopia and where some of them are trying to go instead. Today is Wednesday, June 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C., I'm Steve Karish. A torrent of water burst through a massive dam on the Dnipro River that separates Russian and Ukrainian forces in southern Ukraine on Tuesday. It flooded a swath of the war zone, forcing locals to evacuate and prompting finger-pointing from both sides. Reuters' Zachary Goldman filed this report.
Footage released by Ukraine's emergency services on Tuesday shows rescue workers motorboating through a flooded residential neighborhood in the Kherson region. The area was inundated after a massive dam holding back a reservoir was destroyed, sending a deluge downstream into a war zone and forcing villagers to flee. Drone footage from a Russian news agency shows what's left of the Soviet-era Novokakhovka Dam. Russia has controlled the dam since early in its 15-month-old invasion. Ukraine accused Russia of blowing it up, calling the act a deliberate war crime.
The Kakhovka disaster is yet another proof that Russia is a terrorist state.
Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba on Tuesday released a message calling for an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council to discuss the situation. But the Kremlin said it was Ukraine that sabotaged the dam. Russia's defense minister on Tuesday said Kyiv destroyed it as part of an effort to redeploy military units. Neither side has so far presented evidence for its claims.
As you might expect, we've been closely monitoring the impacts of that destruction, which has triggered massive flooding in Ukraine and resulted in the evacuation of, at the very least, thousands of Ukrainians.
White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby said Washington had not yet determined who or what caused the dam's destruction.
But we cannot say conclusively what happened at this point.
Novokakhovka's demolition comes amid signs Ukrainian forces may be ramping up a long-awaited counteroffensive against Russian troops occupying parts of the country's east.
Blowing up the dam of Kakhovka creates a very good defending position for Russians who expect offensive activity of Ukrainian army.
Maciej Matyszak is a former deputy head of Poland's military counterintelligence service. He said Moscow might have an interest in flooding the region in an effort to stop Kyiv's forces from advancing anytime soon.
At least a month, it excludes this area terrain of use of heavy equipment like tanks or APCs or heavy armored vehicles. But at the same time, it covers for Ukrainian safety on this flank, because during expected offensive of Ukrainian army, Russians won't be able to operate on this direction.
Meanwhile, the humanitarian toll is expected to be severe, displacing even more civilians in a conflict that, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, has already sent 8 million refugees into Europe and internally displaced another 5 million inside Ukraine.
That's Reuters' Zachary Goldman. We'll have more on the dam and possible ramifications for the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant later in the program. The White House has said that recent dangerous encounters between U.S. and Chinese forces in the Taiwan Strait and South China Sea reflect a growing aggressiveness by Beijing's military. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has the details.
The U.S. says two dangerous encounters with China in recent weeks signal rising military aggressiveness from Beijing. After the close calls, one at sea and one in the air, White House spokesperson John Kirby called them unacceptable.
Both of those incidents were in complete compliance with international law. There was absolutely no need for the PLA to act as aggressively as they did. It won't be long before somebody gets hurt. That's the concern with these unsafe and unprofessional intercepts. They can lead to misunderstandings. They can lead to miscalculations.
That warning followed this video released by the U.S. Navy on Sunday, showing what it called an unsafe interaction with a Chinese warship in the sensitive Taiwan Strait. It appears to show a Chinese vessel crossing in front of a U.S. destroyer, forcing it to slow down to avoid a collision. And at the end of May, a Chinese jet carried out what the U.S. called an unnecessarily aggressive maneuver near an American military plane over the South China Sea within international airspace. Kirby said if China wanted to show that the U.S. was not welcome in the area, or to stop American vessels supporting freedom of navigation, it would not succeed.
I sure would like to hear Beijing justify what they're doing. That said, these are intercepts. Now look, air and maritime intercepts happen all the time. Heck, we do it. The difference is when we do it, when we feel like we need to do it, it's done professionally, and it's done inside the international law, and it's done in accordance with the rules of the road.
On Monday, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said that, quote, the measures taken by the Chinese military are completely reasonable, legitimate, and professional and safe. The recent jump in tensions with the U.S. comes as both sides blame one another for not holding military talks, with disagreements over issues ranging from trade in Taiwan to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
That's Reuters' Ryan Brooks reporting. And we're also following these stories from around the world. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has formally launched his 2024 presidential campaign, joining a growing Republican field led by former President Donald Trump. Tanzania's government is encouraging drivers to switch from putting gasoline in their tanks to using compressed natural gas. This initiative aims to lower carbon emissions that cause global warming. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Saudi Arabia for talks about security and economic issues. Ahead of the trip, Blinken said that part of his visit would include working towards boosting the Israeli-Saudi relationship. And authorities in Haiti say that four people were killed when a 4.9 magnitude earthquake struck south of the country before dawn on Tuesday. At least 36 others were injured. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
How many pictures have you taken were ruined by uninvited people who accidentally or purposely jumped into the frame just as it was being photographed? In popular jargon, this is called photobombing. Well, it looks like the Hubble Space Telescope is also having trouble with Earth-orbiting satellites photobombing its observational images. The satellites have been leaving what looks like thin streaks or scratch marks on Hubble-captured images. According to the Space Telescope Science Institute, Hubble was being photobombed as much as every 2 to 4 hours. But officials at the STSCI say that these streaks and scratches aren't a threat to Hubble's observations, thanks to new tools that have been developed that identify and remove these satellite trails in the images. When Hubble was launched, there were about 470 satellites orbiting Earth. Today, there are about 7,700. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
It's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. A look at the ongoing refugee crisis that resulted from Ethiopia's civil war in a little bit. But first, Ukrainian officials are on alert following the destruction of the Kakhovka hydroelectric power station. The Zaporizhia nuclear power plant uses water from the reservoir created by the dam to cool its reactors. With the dam gone, so is much of the water in the reservoir. VOA's Eastern Europe bureau chief Miroslava Gongadze has more.
The Kakhovka hydroelectric dam blew up and partly collapsed on Tuesday, causing the release of water from the reservoir used to cool the Zaporizhia nuclear power station. IAEA Director General Rafael Marino Grossi said the destruction posed no immediate risk to the nuclear plant, but said the situation remains extremely volatile.
The IAEA staff on the site have been informed that the damage to the Nova Kakhovka dam is currently leading to about 5 centimeters per hour reduction in the height of the reservoir.
Mark Zhelezniak is a professor at Fukushima University's Institute of Environmental Radioactivity.
The water release and water level in Kakhovka reservoir is diminishing. We provided providing risk assessment calculation. This calculation demonstrates that after several days, it would depend from the size of this breach in the dam. The water level in Kakhovka reservoirs could be such low that the water intake for cooling pond will be dry.
However, since Zaporizhia's reactors were shut down, Zhelezniak told VOA there is no immediate risk to the station, but the plants still need a cooling mechanism, and there are concerns about how the plant is being run because it's been occupied by Russian forces for more than a year. Petro Kotin, president of Ukraine's state-run nuclear company Energoatom, told VOA that the number of Russian military personnel at the nuclear plant now exceeds the number of personnel who serve the station.
The situation is worsening all the time. The station starting right from the beginning of the occupation, which was on March 4th last year, they came to Energoatom and installed the actually regime when the soldiers are making all the management actually on site.
Kotin, who operated the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant for more than three decades, said that Russian forces pressured and intimidated personnel.
There were some you know, beating of the personnel, and they also captured the staff and put them in the jail and their cages, and then they had all type of tortures in there. And some people were killed, some people missed, and we do not know where they are at the moment.
While Ukrainian energy officials say they are watching the station, they don't have control over what happens there. A security worker at the plant, who identified himself only as Valentin for his own safety, spoke to VOA by phone.
The biggest danger is that the nuclear station is transformed into a fully functioning military base. They built defense lines there and brought a lot of military equipment there. The people who run the station don't understand what they are dealing with. They see the station as a point of defense, but the nuclear station is not, and this most likely will not end up without a serious man-made disaster.
Experts warn any missteps could lead to radiation emission with potentially catastrophic consequences reaching far and wide across Europe, Russia, and the Mediterranean. Ukraine's energy minister, Herman Halushchenko, agrees.
And each day it changed because of the wind, but we see that the clouds, in some days because of the wind, could cover Turkey, Russia, Moldova, Romania, Hungary, Poland, Belarus.
He says the World Nuclear Watchdog should act swiftly to avoid a possible disaster.
When the shelling has happened and the unit is on diesel, so some accidental missiles could just destroy the diesel and that's it. And that's the end. And no discussion who is like... Who is that is Ukraine or that is Russia, to blame who? I mean, it's not matter who would be blamed. The question that is millions of people would suffer from this.
IAEA officials are closely monitoring developments and are planning their next visit to Zaporizhia as early as mid-June. Maroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
Where's the line between freedom of the press and a public figure's right to privacy? It's a contentious issue playing out in a London courtroom as Prince Harry described how the tabloids destroyed his adolescence and personal relationships in testimony against a tabloid publisher that he accuses of unlawful activities. Reuters' Edward Baran has more.
Prince Harry launched a fierce attack on what he called the vile press as he gave evidence against a tabloid publisher on Tuesday. It's the first time a senior British royal has been in the witness box since the 1890s. He blamed tabloids for destroying his adolescence as he gave evidence against tabloid publisher Mirror Group Newspapers or MGN. Harry and 100 others accused the publisher of the Daily Mirror of widespread phone hacking and unlawful information gathering between 1991 and 2011. The Prince faces hours of cross-examination from MGN's lawyer Andrew Green over 33 newspaper articles whose details, he says, were obtained unlawfully. Green began by personally apologising to Harry on MGN's behalf over one instance in which it admitted unlawful information gathering. In his written witness statement, Harry denounced the treatment he'd experienced at the hands of the press, saying he'd been labelled a playboy prince and a failure. He said the press would try to destroy his relationships with girlfriends, blaming them for causing his circle of friends to shrink and leading to bouts of depression and paranoia. In another section of the statement, he said, quote, "How much more blood will stain their typing fingers before someone can put a stop to this madness?" Asked by Green if he was suggesting by this that MGN journalists who wrote the articles at the centre of his lawsuit had blood on their hands, Harry replied, "Some of the editors and journalists that are responsible for causing a lot of pain, upset, and in some cases, perhaps inadvertently, death." Harry said thousands, if not millions, of stories had been written about him as Green pressed him on whether he'd read the Mirror Group articles in question at the time they were published. The 7-week MGN trial began last month. About 20 members of the public queued to gain access to one of around a dozen seats available to the public inside the courtroom. MGN has previously admitted its titles were involved in phone hacking, settling more than 600 claims, but Green has said there was no evidence that Harry had ever been a victim.
That's Reuters' Edward Baran. Tigrayans who fled Ethiopia's civil war to neighboring Sudan say they are not receiving enough aid because of the outbreak of violence there. Yet they are afraid to return to Ethiopia because of alleged ethnic cleansing. Others are falling victim to human traffickers, promising to help them find passage to Europe. Henry Wilkins reports from Carfoun, Chad.
Refugees continue to stream across the Chad-Sudan border, some 7 weeks since Sudan's war started. The number reaching Chad has reached 100,000, according to the UN. Dawood Adam Ishak says he is terrified of the paramilitary rapid support forces, which have been accused of much of the violence that is tearing apart Sudan. He says an armed group linked to the RSF forced him out of his home. He says he saw them, and when they came, they forced him and his family to leave. The men came at night when he was sleeping, so he woke up and fled. The UN says the speed at which refugees have arrived is exceeding expectations. Eugene Bean is a UN refugee agency spokesperson.
The planning figure for refugee across the border into Chad at the beginning of crisis was 100,000, which we surpassed already within 6 weeks. And we are seeing a lot of refugee across the border every day, not just only Chad, but neighboring country.
After a war between Sudan's government and Darfur rebels began in 2003, UN peacekeepers were deployed in the region to prevent violence. That mission came to an end in 2020, partly due to fatigue from nations providing troops and a lack of progress as violence continued, according to some experts. Intercommunal violence sparked by Sudan's new civil war has spiralled again in recent weeks. Asked if there is an argument for a UN peacekeeping mission to resume in Darfur, considering the recent flare-up, Alistair Edgar, an associate professor at Bilseel School of International Affairs, replied,
"Yes, I mean, there's a really quick answer for you. Yes, because of the level of violence and also because of the potential for that violence to spread also outside, you know, into Chad, across borders as well."
UN peacekeeping missions must be instigated by majority vote by the UN Security Council, with no veto from permanent members. Asked if there is the political will for this, Walter Dorn, a professor at the Royal Military College and the Canadian Forces College, said,
"At present, it doesn't look like there's the political will to create a peacekeeping force in Darfur. But as the situation gets worse, there'll be increased calls to do so. The Security Council has not created a large multidimensional UN mission with a peacekeeping component in 8 years.
VOA reached out to most of the permanent and non-permanent member nations of the Security Council. The US mission to the UN said this in a statement: "The actions of the two warring parties have caused immense suffering and harm to the people of Sudan, and we are deeply concerned by ongoing fighting in Sudan's Darfur region. We are committed to pressing both sides to cease hostilities." Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kufrun, Chad.
And finally today, a story of motivation. A climber from Norway is on a mission to scale all 14 of the world's tallest peaks in just 3 months. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Kristen Harala has arrived in Kathmandu after climbing 8 peaks in 40 days.
If we do Manaslu now and then the 5 in Pakistan, we can do it in 3 months. So, yeah. So, yeah, 3 months is possible if we finish Manaslu now.
Harala wants to climb Mount Manaslu in Nepal next. One of the 5 peaks in Pakistan she talked about is K2, the second highest in the world.
Oh, we are very happy that we have made 8 and that we are safe and everyone is good. So we're very happy for that. But we still have one mountain, so let's see.
Harala is attempting to beat the 2019 record set by a male climber who scaled the 14 highest peaks in 189 days. She began in April by scaling Mount Shishapangma, followed by other peaks in China, as well as Nepal, including Mount Everest. I'm Ed Donahue.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the past year, over 100 armed conflicts raged around the world, according to a United Nations report issued in early May. And as the average duration of such conflicts stands at more than 30 years, civilians have continued to endure profound and lasting hardship. In 2022, the United Nations recorded nearly 17,000 civilian deaths across 12 armed conflicts, a 53% increase compared with 2021, said U.S. Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. In Ukraine alone, the UN recorded almost 8,000 civilian deaths, although actual figures are likely higher. This is the human cost of Russia's unprovoked, brutal war of aggression in Ukraine.
This war has also had a devastating impact on vulnerable populations in countries far from Ukraine. Millions and millions more people have been pushed into food insecurity as a result of this conflict. Why? Because Russia has used food as a weapon of war in Ukraine.
There is also an ongoing need to protect and aid those who have been forced from their homes, unsure when or if they will be able to return, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
More than 100 million people have been forcibly displaced as a result of conflict, violence, persecution, human rights violations, and abuses. Burkina Faso, Somalia, Burma, and Ukraine face some of the fastest growing displacement crises. And according to the UN Refugee Agency, fighting in Sudan could displace an additional 1 million people.
We must all do more to stamp out hunger and to save lives, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. At the same time, we must all recognize that no amount of aid will meet the needs of the world's most vulnerable if it cannot reach the world's most vulnerable.
Too often, warring parties intentionally block humanitarian access, and too often, often, the very people who dedicate their lives to saving others are targeted. Last year, more than 250 humanitarian and healthcare workers were killed. Many others were injured, assaulted, or kidnapped. The kidnapping of medical personnel continues across conflicts. Targeting aid workers is a clear violation of international humanitarian law and must be roundly and universally condemned.
We must do more together to protect civilians facing armed conflict, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. We must see our common humanity in those that are suffering. Let us do everything in our power to alleviate that suffering and to secure a more peaceful and just future for all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.